Year of 1970. I first came to India, to Himalayas, in search of spiritual reality. After some time, by inconceivable will of Lord Krishna, I had to come to Bombay. There I met the devotees during the Cross Maidan Pandal program, the first large public preaching program that Srila Prabhupada ever had in India. It was the first time I ever walked through the streets of Bombay, and I came right by that place, and it was the first day of the Pandal program. When I first walked in the door, I saw a book table. And I was very curious, not only curious, but very intensely searching for knowledge. So one devotee, a dear godbrother, he gave me the Krishna book to read. Krishna book had just recently come to India. I think hardly days or weeks before a shipment had arrived. Very large, two volumes with a silver cover. The title was Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that was the first time I ever had read any of Srila Prabhupada's books. And I was so inspired that, especially after meeting Srila Prabhupada and hearing him speaking for about 2 weeks every morning and every evening, I wanted to buy that Krishna book. But I had no money. I went out into the streets of Bombay asking people for bakshish. Those people that annoy you when you stop at the lights, I was one of them. But I wasn't at the lights. I was stopping people as they were coming in front of the Pandal program. I was asking for sadhu bakshish. It took me several days to afford the Krishna book. And when the devotees told Srila Prabhupada that I went out in the street to beg for days just to get one of his books, he was very pleased. And he, with his lotus hand, he rubbed me on top of the head. And with very loving and gracious eyes, he said, "Thank you very much." Krishna book has made thousands of people devotees. In fact, in the streets of America, hundreds and thousands of Krishna books were distributed in airports and streets and parking lots. Although we may think that this is very high philosophy, it's the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam given directly to the atheistic malechas and yavanas of the West, right off. But Srila Prabhupada wrote Krishna book with such a compassionate spirit that he explained everything very nicely according to the basic teachings of Bhagavad Gita. So that anyone who is a little bit receptive in their hearts would become transformed. In fact, Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book explains that one who reads this Krishna book will get love of Krishna. And George Harrison, one of the most famous people of the world at the time from the Beatles, he is the person that paid for the printing of the Krishna book. And Srila Prabhupada, in the preface, offers his profuse blessings and prayers to Krishna to be merciful to this gentleman named George Harrison. Actually, I think Prabhupada called him a very nice boy. Although the whole world is running to see him, to get his autograph signature. Prabhupada called him a nice boy. And George Harrison liked more to be Prabhupada's nice boy than the idol and deity of the whole world. I would like to speak something from Krishna book regarding this holy place that we have come today called Talavan. Srila Prabhupada describes Krishna passed through his Komara age and entered into Auganda. Komara is from birth to 5 years old, and beginning with 6 years old, Krishna entered his Auganda age. At that time, in Nandagaon, on Gopastami, Krishna and Balaram were given charge of the cows by Nanda Maharaj. They would herd their cows throughout Bhavbhumi. And this area, Madhuban, Talavan, is one of the areas that they would come to herd their cows. The gopas would play so many sweet, loving games together. They would run, they would play. Sometimes Krishna would call the cows. He would call each cow by its own personal name, and the cows, hearing Krishna speak the name, would respond by mooing very loudly. The gopas, today he's a little tired cow. He's been giving lots and lots of milk to us over the past few days. When the gopas would see this loving exchange between Krishna and cows, they would become so pleased, they would be overjoyed. Krishna would call their names and they would call back by mooing. They were very, very happy. Because it is the nature of a devotee to find the greatest happiness in life when we see the Lord giving his mercy to another devotee. If the gopas were envious, they would be saying, why isn't he calling my name? Why he's calling this cow's name? But they would be jubilant. Krishna is showing his love for this cow and how the cow is reciprocating. The cow is pleasing Krishna so much simply by mooing. We can build temples, we can collect millions of dollars, we can make thousands of disciples, we can cook hundreds of millions of preparations for Krishna, we can become exalted personalities in whatever field we may be in, scholars, pundits, but we cannot please Krishna through all these efforts as much as that one cow please Krishna just by singing. I can't please Krishna. I can make you laugh, something is there. That one mooing of a simple cow is more pleasing to Krishna than everything we could possibly do in our lives, because they are mooing in pure, unalloyed devotion. Their only desire is to make Krishna and his friends happy by their mooing. So let this be the goal of our life, that we can become so simple and pure that we can please Krishna by whatever little we do or whatever great we do. Other times, Krishna would imitate the birds with his friends, the Chakora birds, the Chatak birds, the peacocks, the Bharadvaj birds. Other times, they would see little animals running away from the big animals. They would imitate them by running away. They would play so much throughout the day, sometimes Balaram would become tired and he would lay down on the lap of one of his cowherd boyfriends. And Krishna would personally come and massage his legs. At other times he would fan him with a fan made out of the local trees of Vrindavan leaves. Other times, Krishna would lay down, sometimes at the root of a tree, sometimes in the lap of a friend, and his little friends would massage him, and they would sing for him, and dance for him, and Krishna would be so pleased. In this way, Srila Prabhupada explains, Krishna lived just like a simple village boy in the groves of Vrindavan. However, at other times, he showed his supreme position as the personality of Godhead, along with Sri Balaram. One day,
sweetest
crow I ever heard. This is a Madhurya crow. In Taliban, even the crows can sing like cuckoos. I don't think it's a crow. So, one day, Krishna's very intimate friends, Sridhama, Subala, and Stoka Krishna, they approached Krishna Balaram. Oh, Balaram, whose arms are very, very strong. Oh, Krishna, who is the killer of many demons, we have an appeal to make for you. Nearby is the forest of Taliban. In that forest, there are flesh-ripened tal fruits growing from innumerable trees. Those fruits are so sweet that the fragrance from these fruits is pervading all directions. Can you not smell it now? It is intoxicating just to smell it. We are very much eager to taste these fruits with you, Krishna Balaram. However, there is a big problem. There is a demon in the form of an ass of the dame Demukasura, who is living in that forest along with so many other ass demons. And they are so wicked and cruel that they keep all the fruits for themselves. And any living being except themselves that comes into the forest, they brutally destroy them. There's not even an insect, not even a bird, nothing lives in that forest. It is explained that Demukasura was a very confidential friend of Kamsa. In fact, Kamsa at one time defeated him. He beat him up and had him on the verge of death and told Demukasura, either you serve me and you be my ally or you die. Previously, according to Garga Samhita, the narration is that Prahlad Maharaj was the son of Hiranyakashipu, who was the son of Kashyapa and Diti. That means, after Hiranyakashipu died by the hands of Nrsimhadev, Prahlad Maharaj was coronated as the king of the demons, the devatas. Now, sometimes, as we'll hear throughout these narrations in Brajbhumi, sometimes kings of the demons were actually very pious, gentle people. But they were born in that race, and they inherited the throne. So my Srila Dev gave Prahlad benediction that of your descendants, I will not personally kill any of them from this point on. So the son of Prahlad was Virochan. The son of Virochan was Bali Maharaj. And one of the descendants of Bali Maharaj, name was Shashaka. Shashaka was a very, very egoistic demon with terribly uncontrolled senses. One time Devas Muni was performing his tapasya, and this Shashaka with his two wives, they went right close to Devas Muni's ashram and started engaging in sensual activities together. Such impudence, it was an insult to a great sage. So Devas Muni became very angry, as he often does, and he cursed him, that you are acting like a foolish ass. Therefore I curse you to become an ass. At that time Shashaka became very humble, and he begged Devas Muni, please don't make me an ass, please don't make me an ass. He said, you'll be an ass. But when Krishna will not be able to kill you because of your family line, but his brother Balaram will kill you and relieve you of this curse. So of course when he became an ass, he became like an ass. He forgot all of these treasured instructions that Devas Muni gave him. And he was very wicked, associate of Kamsa, living here in Talavan. Balaram and Krishna, in order to please their friends, they came into this forest, singing and dancing. Balaram saw a big, big cow tree, began to shake it with his mighty arms. He shook it so hard that all the big, ripened tall fruits began to fall to the ground. The boys were jumping and singing and laughing to see Balaram performing like this, and they were picking up the tall fruits to eat them. Venukasura heard the tall fruits falling. He was outraged. Who dares come into my forest? Venukasura galloped out. As he was galloping, he was so big that all the trees were shaking as if there was an earthquake. He saw Balaramji there shaking the trees. He was so angry. He went right up to Balaram, turned around to his hind legs as asses do, and kicked him as hard as he could right in the chest. Sri Balaramji just patiently stood there, not at all disturbed by being kicked by the demon. This disturbed the demon even more. It was an insult. He didn't even say ouch or do anything, just as if nothing was happening. Then the demon was more bitterly angry. He turned again and kicked him right in the chest. Balaramji effortlessly with one hand took both of the hind legs of Devukasura and twirled him around over his head so fast that the demon's life force left his body. Just by the centrifugal force of that wind, he was dead. Then Balaramji threw that huge dead body of Devukasura into the tallest of the tall trees. The tall tree fell down onto another tall tree, which fell down onto another tall tree, which fell down into another tall tree. Seeking revenge on Krishna Balaram, the asses who were the associates of Devukasura, they came running out, each one turning around to kick Krishna Balaram. Krishna Balaram, standing beside each other, were one by one grabbing each of the asses by the hind legs, twirling them around so fast that they died of dizziness. Sometimes when we're doing kirtan, we spin around. And sometimes you get a little dizzy like this. But he actually dizzied them to death. And Krishna was throwing and Balaram was throwing until soon the tall trees were full with, and their branches, with big, gigantic, dead asses. Prabhupada explained it was a panoramic scene. Because the asses were all different colors. They were like clouds, big, big clouds floating on the trees. Seeing this, the demigods showered flowers and began to play their drums and blow their bugles in celebration of the glories of Sri Krishna and Balaram. Sri Krishna Balaram ki! So this demon Venukasura Krishna could not kill him himself because of the promise he made to Prahlad. So he personally had Balaramji kill this demon. After killing Venukasura, all the cowherd boys started eating the fruits, and first, of course, they would offer them to Krishna, and Krishna would offer them to their friends, and they would eat a nice picnic of tall fruits in this forest. Then the animals came back to eat the fresh grasses, and the birds came back to eat the sweet seeds and the fruits and the trees. And again, Talaban became a very pleasurable forest for Krishna and Balaram's pastimes. When they came into Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada explains, after killing Venukasura, returning to Nandadam, the gopis, they would all day long be immersed in feelings of separation, waiting for Krishna to return. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu revealed what was the mood of the gopis. That without seeing Krishna, one moment was like 12 years or more. Krishna would leave in the early morning, and he would come back just around the time of sunset. Throughout that time, the gopis of Braja, the gopas, they were very happy. They were playing with Krishna Balaram all day long. And the gopis, the only thing that would keep them alive was all day long they would sing the glories of Krishna and Balaram. You see, each day the cowherd boys would come back and tell the wonderful pastimes that Krishna would perform in that day, what demons he would kill. It is explained usually by his own arrangement he would kill a demon just before lunch. Because it was always such an exciting thing that everyone, both Krishna as well as all the gopas, would increase their appetite so they could enjoy Yashoda Mai's and Radharani's cooking all the more. When Krishna would return, gopis would be looking at him just like their eyes were like bees, like honey bees hovering over the world of a lotus. Then Yashoda Mai would give Krishna and Balaram their baths and feed them nice prasad and put them in their nice soft beds to go to sleep. And as they were trying, as they put their little boys Krishna and Balaram in their beds, Rohini Devi and Yashoda Mai would sing beautiful, beautiful songs glorifying their two sons. In this way, Krishna lived here in Vrindavan. Balaramji is declared to be the original spiritual master. This story has very important significance. I'm just thinking while sitting here in Talaban that our hearts are something like the Talaban forest. The heart is a beautiful place. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told us that the heart is meant to be the place for Krishna to be performing his pastimes. And the fruits of our heart that Krishna enjoys is our propensity to serve him and love him. But at this particular time, our hearts are filled with innumerable Venukasuras and associates, like asses,
And because of that, Krishna cannot perform his pastimes in our heart. Krishna's name doesn't even stay in our heart. And the propensity to serve and love, the propensity, all the propensities of our hearts, which are the fruits meant for Krishna's satisfaction, are being devoured day by day by day by these asuras in the form of anartas. Lust, envy, anger, greed, pride, and illusion. They are like Deluk asuras in our hearts, just eating all the fruits of our life, of our love, of our desire to serve, and engaging them in their service. Therefore, Krishna cannot perform his lila in the talavan of our hearts. So what is our hope? Balaram represents the spiritual master. When we allow the Guru Parampara's representatives to come into our heart, Srila Prabhupada, like Balaramji, he has come into our hearts, and through his instructions, through his example, through his inspiration, he has come to kill all the Deluk Asuras within our heart. If we take shelter of those instructions, lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, and illusion can only be destroyed by the mercy of the spiritual master. So therefore, with ever-increasing gratitude and enthusiasm, we should bow down to our great Parampara, Srila Prabhupada and our Acharyas, and the Vaishnavas who are helping us to engage in the service of Sri Guru and Gauranga. Because by their mercy they can kill these Deluk Asuras. And what happens when by Guru's grace these Deluk Asuras are dead? Then Krishna once again enters into our heart to manifest his eternal spiritual pastimes and enjoy the fruits of our love and our service. Deluk Asura was an ass. The nature of an ass is he is beast of burden. As long as we continue in this material conception of life, we are like asses, carrying the burden of all our previous sins, of all our previous lives, and suffering the karmic consequences of all of those sins. Also, like asses, we have to struggle so very, very hard just for our existence in this world. As we're growing older, we're taking note how all over the world, everywhere we go, people are working so hard just to survive. And even if they have so much, they're working so hard just to maintain it or increase it. We have all come from cities like Bombay. What do we see? People are just on those trains and in that traffic and building skyscrapers and office buildings higher and higher and higher. It's just a massive kingdom of Deluk Asuras. Taliban was a forest, but now there's cities of Deluk Asuras. Just working like asses. For what? Just to be kicked by Maya again and again and again. So, how very grateful we are to Srila Prabhupada for giving us this Krishna book, for revealing to us the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for giving us the association of devotees, and for allowing us to let him into our hearts to kill these Deluk Asura propensities through the loud chanting of the holy name. In the temples, the deities of Balaramji, who you see in one hand he is holding the cup filled with varuni, that transcendental natural beverage, which is actually the offering, it's really the ambrosial offering of his devotee's love that he's drinking and becoming intoxicated by. It's not a liquor. He's actually drinking the love of his devotees. And he's becoming intoxicated by that love. And on the left side of him is Revati, his eternal consort. And on the right side is Sri Gopal playing upon his flute, calling us back to his eternal pastimes. So in this place of Taliban, very holy, one of the 12 forests of Vrindavan, visited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, we should pray. We should pray for the causeless mercy of Sri Guru and Gauranga. Pray that they may, that we can sincerely invite them, just like the cowherd boys. They appeal to Krishna Balaram, come into this forest. Similarly, we want to appeal, we want to pray, we want to beg Krishna through his devotees. Please, Guru Maharaj, O great Vaishnavas, please come into my heart. Please slay these demons. And let me once again be immersed in remembering your pastimes, serving your devotees, and chanting your holy names. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Rama Rama.
Please, Krishna, let my Guru Maharaj offer these fruits of my life for your pleasure, for all of eternity. In this beautiful forest of Taliban, let us take a moment of silence to offer this sincere, helpless prayer at the lotus feet of Sri Guru and Gauranga.
Sri-mār-rūpa-padāṁ-bhūjo-dhūli-syāṁ-janma-janmani Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityānanda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Vyāsati Gaurava Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So we have many places to see today, so I'll just make a few little brief comments. One was yesterday we saw, I showed you the kunda flower, this beautiful white kunda flower. In summertime, Dela Mogra comes, and this cool season, this kunda flower comes. And I one time found a very beautiful verse that described Lord Balaram. This is a beautiful deity of Balaram is here. Shankha Kundindu Svetanga Balaram. Shankha Kundindu Svetanga Balaram. His ang, it is white, whitish, just like Shankha. You have seen Kancha is white? Shankha Kunda. Kunda. This Kunda flower we saw yesterday, beautifully white. Indu. Indu means, we just saw when we were in underground last night, Krishna was winking at us in the sky. Huh? That moon, Indu means moon. Shankha Kunindu Svet Anga Balara. And Maharaj was describing how Balaram is Guru Tattva. We're removing all of the anarthas from our heart. So when I stay in Vrindavan, I get some idea. Because Balaram In one hand, he's holding a musal. Because we don't know what musal is, we just say it's a club. But actually, musal is a special thing. That is for, just like now, everywhere we go, we see the rice is there. Then they take this musal, they beat the rice, and all that useless chaff goes away, and you get nice rice. Other is a plow. Balaram's got a plow. So what is he plowing? He's plowing living entities. So I was thinking one day, just like when I stay there, when I see the farmers themselves, they come there and they do all the plowing. Previously they had bulls, now they have these big tractors. But that's the hardest part, because if the ground isn't proper, you don't get rid of all the weeds, and you don't break up the ground properly, then whatever you try to grow there is just going, it won't grow. So that's the hard part. So unless they get their big tractors or their big bulls out there and everything else, they get some hired laborers to come pull out the weeds, you know, later when things are growing, and they get some hired laborers to come along and cut over rice or weed or whatever it is. But the plowing, that's the hard part. Everything else is just done by the hired laborers. So we like that. Prabhupada, he was the pure representative of Balaram. He went all over the world and just plowed, blah, 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 broke up the ground, tore out the weeds, you know, created a field for actually bhakti could grow. The rest of us, we're just the higher laborers. We're just coming by. I mean, I see all these thousands of people sitting here. I think, I didn't do anything. I'm just a rascal. What did I do that they all, I didn't do anything. This is all Prabhupada's mercy. We're just the hired laborers coming here. Then we're cutting all the fruits. We get to associate with all these wonderful Vaishnavas who have so many wonderful qualities, who chant so sweetly and dance so nicely. We're just the hired laborers coming behind. Even in Gaudiya Math, they admit, he says, Swamiji Maharaj, he made tunnels to the west, and we're just going through those tunnels. Even in Gaudiya Math, they admit it. He says, Swamiji Maharaj, he made the tunnels. We're just going through behind in those tunnels that Swami Maharaj made. And Maharaj gave a nice example of, we're trying to describe a little bit about the ass, beast of burden. But if you really want to know how foolish the ass is, you have to understand, he's really foolish. His mother name is Vaishak Nandan. You have to understand, he's really foolish. His mother name is Vaishak Nandan. You know Vaishak. It's not our favorite month. It gets hot. Just before Jaist. But as he becomes very happy in that month. Why? Because Vaishak is very hot. There's hardly any grass growing anywhere. So he eats a little bit here, eats a little bit there, eats a little bit here. He goes for 2, 3, 4 kilometers. You know, just, and he still doesn't fill his belly. But he looks bad and he thinks, my God, I went so far, I ate so much grass. He becomes very happy. And we see happy people, when it happens to them, they become very fat. He just looks bad and says, wow, I went so far, I must have eaten so much grass. He becomes very happy. And then when rainy season comes, grass is everywhere. He eats a little grass and he looks back. I didn't go anywhere. And he gets some anxiety. He eats a little grass. I didn't go anywhere. I haven't eaten anything all day. You know, he just becomes, and when people have anxiety, what happens? They become very thin and sickly. So he becomes very happy wearing Vaishak. So his name is Vaishak Man. This is foolishness of the ass. So by mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we're trying to become freed from all these ass-like qualities that we have. So we're wandering around in this Taliban forest. Now we'll go to a very sweet forest, Madhuvan. Next. One gets rid of his ass-like qualities, then he becomes very sweet, like all of you have become so sweet devotees. Madhu devotees. And we see by staying here, wandering in these forests of breads, and our meditation also becomes like madhu.
You know? When you pour water, as soon as you stop, it stops. You know? Or milk, even milk. You know? Even nice, very nice liquids you pour. But what happens when you pour madhu? You pour it, and even you turn it upside down, it just keeps coming and coming and coming and coming. You turn it completely still, it's rolling down and down and down. It doesn't break, it just... So by wandering through these forests of bread or meditation, the ordinary meditation of Krishna is just like water. But by wandering through these forests of bread and the association of Anna Swami or meditation on Krishna is just becoming like madhu. Talavana ki! Sri Dauji Maharaj ki! Vange Srila Prabhupada ki! To our right is Shankar Shan Kun, or to your left. This Kund is where Balaramji bathed after he killed Devakasura. Yesterday we were at Javat. I'd like to share one very small story with your permission. There is a Kund there at Javat called Kishori Kund. There's another very famous Kishori Kund at Kadiraban. There's different ways Jiva Goswami explains we can receive knowledge. The best is Shastra Pramana from the scriptures. One is Lok Pramana, which means from the local people. So, through tradition and generations within these holy places, there are stories about these holy places. And some of them may not specifically be the highest authority that we get from Shastra, but our acharyas did give credibility. So I'd like to tell one very sweet story that the local Brijabasis tell about Kishori Kund. With your permission? Kamsa, one time, came on his way to Nandagaon to kill Krishna Balaram. Now Kishori Kund, that area, close to Javat, are very confidential meeting places of Radha, Krishna and the Sakis. And to protect the environment, there was a law. The law was no males except Krishna were allowed to go there. And any male that tried to go there was cursed to become a female. Now Kamsa didn't notice. So he came marching in, and he came into this forest, and all of a sudden, he became a Mataji. Kamsa Mata. Kamsi. He had female body. And he was terrible distress. Because one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. He was thinking, I'll go back to Mathura, and I'll be a woman. I'll have all the features of a woman. What type of a total humiliation and embarrassment that will be. So he was completely in distress. He lost all of his strength in a state of embarrassment. So he saw some gopis. And he asked them, you know, what happened to me? How is this? He had a high voice. And the woman, he had no strength. So they said, this is the
This is the reaction of coming into this. There no man can come into this forest. The only way you can be forgiven from your offense and get your original body back is you have to fall at the feet and surrender to Srimati Radharani, who is Vrindavaneshwari. So Kamsa came before Srimati Radharani near Kishori Kund, and Kamsa, weeping tears in his eyes, prostrated himself at her lotus feet and actually worshipped her, begging her to give him back his body of Kamsa. Srimati Radharani said, I will give you back your body of Kamsa, but you have to make a promise. You can never come to the villages of Nandagram or Barsana, where Krishna lives or I live. You can never come into those towns, and you can never ever send any asuras into Barsana or Nandagram to disturb our residences. Otherwise, you will become a woman again. So we find that there is no stories of any demons ever coming into the village of Nandagram or Barsana. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki Jai Jai Shri Radhe. This story also shows the supreme power of Srimati Radharani's heart. At this time we will have kirtan procession to the buses and proceed to the forest of Madhubani.
Going by bus? Going by bus?
I think we're... What is the plan? Are we going by... You are on the Rasi platform and Radha Krishna is on the management platform. And then considerations of time... The management platform sometimes has to overrule. Radha Gopinath, have so mercifully reciprocated with our insignificant attempts to serve them and please them, that they have awarded us entrance into the land of Braj Bhumi. Today we are all sitting in this very beautiful grove in the forest of Madhuban. Madhuban has a very great history in the holy scriptures. In every yuga, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally appeared to perform his pastimes in the forest of Madhuban. I would like to briefly narrate some of the wonderful incidents that have taken place in this beautiful forest. The Srimad Bhagavatam describes in the Satyayuga the son of Maharaj Uttanapada, grandson of Swayambhuva Manu, name was Dhruva, being disturbed by the neglect of his father, he went into the forest. There he met with Srila Narada Muni, who sent him to this holy place of Madhuban on the banks of the river Jamuna. It was here that Dhruva Maharaj performed severe tapasya, constantly remembering the Lord within his heart and chanting his holy names. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally appeared before Dhruva Maharaj in his incarnation of Krishna Garbha, there he fulfilled all of Dhruva Maharaj's innermost desires.
later on in the Sati Yuga, Maharaj Ambarish, he left his opulent kingdom to come to this forest of Madhuban on the banks of the river Jamuna to perform the Ekadasi fast for 1 full year, worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, worshipping the deity of the Lord, taking the name of the Lord. It was here that we read that amazing pastime of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Giribhasa Muni came just at the time when Ambarish Maharaj was about to break a 1 year fast. Giribhasa Muni came with his followers and expected proper hospitality and prasad. But he said, before I will take any prasad, I must first take my bath and chant my Gayatri mantras. Well, Giribhasa Muni was immersed in meditation near the Jamuna. At that time, Ambarish Maharaj understood that the parana, or the specific time to break his fast, was about to end. Now, Ambarish Maharaj, as the leader or king of the world, was not performing his tapasya simply for his own personal benefit. But whatever the king does, the entire kingdom gets the benefits. He was performing these austerities and worshipping the Lord to bring upon the descent of the Lord's blessings to every single person within his kingdom. So much was at stake. Now in Kali Yuga, no one can perform any rituals very exact. And therefore, the only real sacrifice that it is feasible to bring about real purification in the age of Kali is the congregational chanting of the holy names. In previous ages, if you performed any type of sacrifice or tapasya, if it was not specific and exact in its execution, it would not bring good results. On the contrary, it would be bring about disastrous results. So Ambarish Maharaj, with consultation of the Brahmins, he used his good intelligence and just sipped a little charanamrita, knowing that drinking water simultaneously breaks fast but also does not break fast. But Giribhasa Muni, by his mystic powers, he was very much all-knowing. So he could understand that Ambarish has drunk water without first serving me, who is his guest. So he came, and he was very angry with Ambarish Maharaj. You call yourself a king, you call yourself a leader and a devotee, you are an uncontrolled sense enjoyer. You cannot even properly execute the duties toward a guest, therefore you must die. He took a hair from his head, dashed it against the ground, and a massive fiery demon, qualified to destroy the universe, was created. Ambarish Maharaj was not afraid. Radhe Krishna, Marike, Mari Krishna, Radhe Krishna. He knew that if Krishna wants me to die, let me die remembering him. And if Krishna wants to save me, nothing can disturb me. So he peacefully meditated on the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord always reciprocates with the prayers of his devotees. Kauntaya prati janahi mane bhakta pranashyati. Krishna's promise, I will protect my devotees who always remember me. He sent his Sudarshan chakra. That chakra went right toward that fiery demon and destroyed him. Then he went toward Giribhasa Muni. Giribhasa Muni went running away. When he couldn't get away running, he started flying away. He went from planet to planet to Indraloka. Please give me shelter. Indra said, Sudarshan Chakra, Hare Krishna, dhanyavaad. I think I can do. He went to Brahma's abode. He said, please give me shelter, give me shelter. Brahma saw Sudarshan Chakra, and all Brahma could do was offer his obeisances to Sudarshan Chakra. He went to Shiva's abode. Shiva said, you have gained the wrath of Vishnu. Nothing can save you. No one can save you except Vishnu himself. Durvasa had such powers. He flew all the way to Vaikuntha. And there he fell at the lotus feet of Lord Narayan and said, I surrender to you. Please save me. Narayan said that I cannot save you because you have offended my devotee. Because my devotees are always worshipping me, remembering me, I always worship and remember my devotees. Because my devotees have no one else in the world but me, I have no one else but my devotees. The devotees who love me with pure devotion have conquered my hearts. I have no power to save you from your offense from Ambarish Maharaj. Only if you fall at his feet and get his forgiveness can you be delivered. At that time, Durvasa Muni understood who this Grihastha king really was. He was the bravest of the renunciates, but he fell at the feet of this Grihastha, Ambarish Maharaj, crying and begging forgiveness, praising him. Ambarish Maharaj, for that full year that Durvasa Muni was running away from Sudarshan Chakra, he did not take a drop of water. He just took a little water, but he would not eat anything. Because he still had not served his guest. Ambarish Maharaj prayed to Sudarshan Chakra to please deliver him. Ambarish Maharaj, with such humility and devotion, begged forgiveness from Durvasa Muni for the inconvenience he had caused him, and then fed him nice prasad. So that lila took place here at Madhuban, at the ending part of Satya Yuga. During the Treta Yuga, the Lord also appeared here in Madhuban in a very, very wonderful way. With your permission, I will make some insignificant attempt to narrate the story. After Lord Ramchandra slayed the deadly asura, Ravana, he reigned as the king of Ayodhya. One day, some great rishis who were the descendants of Bhrigu Muni, led by Chaivan Muni, came to Ayodhya with great, great distress in their hearts. There is nothing that hurts the Lord's heart more than seeing the distress of his devotees. Lord Sri Ramchandra and his brothers, Lakshman, Bharat, and Sukrutna, honored these great sages by washing their feet and giving them elevated places to sit, and inquired, how may we serve you? Chaivan Muni explained that we are coming from our hermitage on the banks of the holy river Jamuna in a forest called Madhuban. On behalf of all the devotees there, we are begging for your help. There is a demon. His name is Lavana Asura. This Lavana Asura is so wicked, so cruel, and so powerful. He will not allow anyone to perform any spiritual activities. As soon as someone starts to try to meditate, he will put them in their mouth, in his mouth, and devour them. As soon as we start to try to perform a yajna, he will fly in the sky and throw stool, urine, blood, bones, pus, and all kinds of abominable substances just to destroy. Then he will torture the sages and rishis. If he hears anyone chanting any sacred mantras, he will kill them.
He will not allow anyone to even enter into the holy river Jamuna to take their bath. We have appealed to great kings. Every king that tried to help us with his entire armies was killed by Vallabhanasura. And all other kings, just by hearing his name, they will not come near this place called Madhuban. We have heard, my dear Lord, that recently you killed the demon Ravana. So we are thinking that you are the one that can slay Ravanasura and liberate us from his atrocities. Lord Rama asks, can you tell me something about who this Ravanasura is? Yes? One of the great descendants of Kashyapa and Diti was an asura of the name Madhu. He was the king, the emperor of the entire Asura dynasty. However, he was a perfect gentleman. He had a very kind and charitable heart. He was generous to everyone. He executed the perfect type of etiquette toward all living beings. He was compassionate. He loved the Brahmins. He served the Brahmins. He so gently and graciously executed the orders of the Brahmins. Lord Shiva was so pleased that this king of Asuras was such a wonderful, perfect person in his behavior and how he pleased everyone that came in contact with him. In fact, this Madhu, he was such a good person that he made friends with all the demigods. There was peace and friendship between the demons and the demigods under his rule, because he was cordial to all of them. Lord Shiva was so pleased with him that he gave him his ultimate weapon. Lord Shiva appeared to him in a darshan and said, I want to give you my own trident. Lord Shiva had a trident, and he chanted a mantra, and from his trident, another trident was created. Then he gave that trident to Madhu. He told him, now, nothing can harm your kingdom. This trident is so powerful, it is infallible. Anyone you throw it toward will be destroyed. If you throw it toward an entire army, within a moment it will be burnt to ashes. So Madhu took the trident and got so many benedictions and favor from the demigods. He built a beautiful city here, what is now called Mathura. At that time it was called Madhupuri, the city built by Adi. He had a son through his wife. The son's name was Ravana. He was nothing like his father. The ancestral Asura genes were very strong in him. He was wicked. He was cruel. He was bloodthirsty. He would just devour people, eat their flesh, drink their blood. He was such a terrible demon that even when he was a child, his only play was murdering and eating everything he saw. And he hated the demigods, he hated the rishis, and Madhu did everything to control him, but there was nothing he could do. In utter frustration, Madhu entered into the ocean and gave up his life. But before he did that, he had to turn over his trident to to his son. And something so powerful is in the hands of someone so cruel, it creates terrible, terrible situation within this world. The sages of Madhuban explained to Lord Ram, we'll give you one out of innumerable examples of how powerful this Lavanasura is. There was a king in the dynasty of Ikshvaku. His name was Mandata. Mandata gained such strength through his tapasya. Between him and his armies, he conquered the entire world. He became so infatuated with pride that no one could even stand before him in battle, that he decided that he was going to conquer Indra, the king of heaven. Half his kingdom would be the earth and half would be heaven. So he approached Indra and said, I demand that you give me your kingdom or you fight me. Indra replied to him that if you conquer everyone on the earth, then I will give you my kingdom. No doubt you subdued every dynasty and every kingdom on earth, but there's one person you have not fought with, and that's Lavanasura, who lives in Madhuban. He is not following your instructions. If you can conquer him, then I'll give you my heavenly abode. Mandata, very, very, very strong, powerful king, he came here to Madhuban with all of his millions of soldiers. And Lavanasura, he was living in the kingdom of Mathura, but because he was such a meat eater, there was no quantity of food that could possibly fit in Mathura, so he would come out to the jungles and just eat everything he saw. Mandata approached him. Lavanasura said, oh, you have come to fight? Very good, I will eat you on this very moment. So Mandata, Raj, he brought out all of his most powerful weapons and he charged with his entire forces of military. Lavanasura was standing alone. Lavanasura took that trident of Shiva and threw it, and within a second, Mandata and his entire army were burned to ashes. If he has his weapon in hand, nothing can defeat him. Please, Ram, this is what you're up against, but we believe you are the only one who can save us. Lord Ramchandra felt very much sympathy toward these great sages. So he asked his three brothers, which of you would like to go and kill this rascal, Lavanasura? Immediately, Bharat stood up and said, I will go to Madhuban and I will kill him. Then Sutrukna stood up and said, oh, Sri Ram, I don't think it's right for Bharat to go kill him. Let me go and kill him. After all, I haven't done anything yet for you. Bharat has performed so many inconveniences. When we were in the forest for 14 years, he lived performing severe tapasya in Nandigram, living with tree bark on his body, matted hair, and only drinking urine from cows as his only food. And in that condition, he ruled the entire city of Ayodhya for 14 years. He's done enough austerities and accepted enough troubles on your behalf. And he's my older brother. I don't like to see him have to deal with all of these difficulties. Please, let me go. Bharat, Ram, Lakshman, they all unanimously congratulated Sutrukna. and said, "Yes, Satrupa, you have our blessings. You go to Madhuban and you kill Lavanasura." And Satrupa felt very bad. He said, "Actually, I spoke up too fast. Because my brother, he said he wanted to do it. But then I stood up and I said I wanted to do it. That was not proper etiquette. I have committed an offense." When a senior person wants to perform a service, it is not the etiquette for a junior person to volunteer to do that instead. Ram and his brothers always followed perfect etiquette of respect for all living beings according to their positions. So I have made a big mistake and I beg forgiveness for this offense. But at the same time, you have given me the order to kill Lavanasura, so I will go. Then Lord Ram explained that this demon is very dangerous. And you're a small child. You're the youngest of all of us. He was the little brother of Lakshman. Ram told him that if this Lavanasura has Shiva's trident in his hands, you will not be able to destroy him. Nothing could stop him. You have to somehow or other figure out a way that you can fight with him when he doesn't have that trident. I'm preparing you for the day after tomorrow when we go to Ayodhya. Some Ram-lila. But it's also Vrindavan-lila. Thus, Ram gave him good instructions. Then Ram decided that before you go, I will coronate you as the king of Mathura. He called Vasishtha Muni and all the great Brahmins to have an elaborate coronation ceremony. And Lord Ramchandra personally performed the Abhishekam and had all the mantras chanted to coronate Shatrughna as the king of Mathura. Ram then gave him his own personal deity of Lord Varahadev to worship. This deity of Varahadev has a great history. It was originally created by the mind of Lord Kapiladev and given to Indra. Ravana conquered Indra and stole that deity and had him kept in Sri Lanka. After Ramchandra defeated Ravana, he coronated Vibhishan as king. Vibhishan offered everything in his kingdom, including his own life, to Ram. Ram said, "I do not want anything, but please grant me this deity of Varahadev." The Lord took the deity back to Ayodhya and gave it to Satrughna to take to Madhupuri to install there in personal worship. On the way from Ayodhya to Madhuban, Satrughna stopped at the ashram of Valmiki Muni. There he worshipped the great sage Valmiki, who narrated him so many beautiful, beautiful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Valmiki Muni told him that Sita Devi, the consort of Ram, who had already been banished to his ashram, was living in a very beautiful little forest area close to his ashram. While Satrughna was there at Valmiki Muni's ashram, at that very time, Sita gave birth to two children. Just around midnight time, the great rishis came to Valmiki Muni to inform him that Sita has given birth to twin children. Valmiki Muni performed a beautiful ceremony for the two children. What he did is he took kusha grass. The top part of the kusha grass is called kusha, and the bottom part is called lava. He took the top part
and he cleaned the body of the firstborn child with Kusha. Then he cleaned this second child born with the bottom part called Lava. Then he formally declared that their names will be Kusha and Lava. Shatrughna came to have darshan of Sita and the two newborn children. He worshipped Sita, worshipped her lotus feet with great reverence, and worshipped the two children of his beloved Lord Sri Ramachandra. Shatrughna took an entire army. He sent the army ahead to be on the other side of the banks of the Jamuna, waiting. Then with the blessings of Valmiki Muni, Ram told him, don't fight him until the Shravan season begins. So he came here during that time, and he had a plan. He stood outside the gate of the city where the forest began, and he waited for Ravanasura. Every day Ravanasura went to gather his food. Would you like to hear what he would eat? Mm-hmm. Most people in Vrindavan eat braja rotis, but not Ravanasura. He would come back, and on his spear and in his arms, there were literally thousands and thousands and thousands of dead animals that he was bringing back to eat. There was hundreds of lions, hundreds of tigers, hundreds of elephants, crocodiles, big massive snakes. What to speak of any human being he would happen to find. That was his favorite delicacy. His favorite delicacy was humans, but the best of the humans was the sweetest of all humans in his taste was the Brahmins and the Rishis. Hare Krishna. So he would have thousands and thousands. He was massive. His mouth was huge. He could put dozens of elephants in his mouth at a time. He was not just an ordinary demon. So he came back with all these dead animals all over his, on his back, on his spear, on his arms, his head. And he came before Shatrughna. Shatrughna said, I have come to challenge you to fight. Ravanasura was thinking, you have come. This is very nice. I'm carrying my dinner and you're standing right in front of me just like a nice appetizer. I will swallow you at this very moment. He said, I challenge you to fight. Ravanasura saw that he had a bow and arrow. Let me tell you something about this arrow. Just when he was about to depart from Ayodhya, Lord Ramchandra said that this demon is very, very difficult to kill by any means. I am going to give you the most priceless, powerful arrow I have. You'll have to use that to kill Ravanasura. This arrow, at the time before the creation, Lord Brahma was born, and two demons named Madhu and Kaitava, this is a different Madhu, and Kaitava, they attacked Lord Brahma. And Mahavishnu, Vishnu, laying in the ocean, he created this arrow from his own body to be used to kill Madhu and Kaitava. That arrow was given to me. The reason I never used this arrow against Ravana is it's so powerful, it would have destroyed everything in sight if I used it. Shatrughna had that arrow. Ravanasura, when he saw that Kripalu was armed nicely. He said, I'll be happy to fight you if you challenge me. But you just wait a few seconds. I have to go and get my weapons. They're in the city. Satrughna stood right before him in the gate. He said, I will not let you pass. He said, but it is touching a code. You have to let me get my weapons to fight. Satrughna said, you have a spear, that's a weapon. You've killed all those animals with it. You are a coward. According to Chachi's codes, when a real Chachi is challenged to fight, he fights instantly. He does not wait for anything. He's not such a coward that he gives the excuse, I want to get my weapon so he can run away and hide. You fight me now, and you will be a disgrace to your dynasty, and you will be ashamed. Bhavanasura was so infuriated by hearing these insulting words, he immediately picked up a massive tree and threw it. Satrughna took arrows and cut to pieces the tree. He took another tree and threw it. Satrughna threw it, shot some arrows and cut it to pieces. He started picking up rocks and throwing it. But everything, he was being just made into powder by Satrughna's great prowess. Then he picked up a massive tree, and screaming in great anger, he hit Satrughna right on the head with it. Satrughna lay down on the ground unconscious. Lavanasura was convinced he was dead, because there was no one he ever came across that he did not kill. So he was thinking he would bring his other food and then he would come out and eat Satrughna a little later. But then as he was walking toward the gate, Satrughna got up. And he said to Lavanasura, now I am going to send you to the abode of Yamaraj. He took that arrow and strung it on his bow. As soon as the arrow touched the bow, the entire universe began to tremble. There was lightning and effulgences just flashing in all directions on all the planets. People could hardly even breathe. At that time, the devatas were so agitated and disturbed, they all approached Lord Brahma and said, what's happening? What's happening? Brahma said, this is very good. The arrow of Ram is about to kill Lavana. He pulled that arrow back to his ear and released it. It went flying through the sky and entered right into the heart of Bhavanasura. It sucked his very life force from his heart. Then it came out of his body and back into the quiver of Satrughna. Meanwhile, Lavanasura screamed in great agony and fell to the ground dead, just like a great tree is struck down by lightning. Sri Bhagavan Ram Ki Jai! The demigods were so pleased that they started offering any benedictions to Satrughna. He said, the only benediction I desire, this great city of Madhupuri will always be glorified. The demigods named it Surasena because Satrughna had that great army of divine beings that were protecting the city. So that pastime took place here in Madhuban and Treta Yuga. And in Dwapara Yuga, Krishna and Balaram were living here in Vrindavan. And every day they would bring their cows here to Madhuban. This little kund that is beside us is called Krishna Kund. Each day Krishna and Balaram would have their cows drink the water from Krishna Kund. Gopas also would drink that water. They would bathe and have sports in Krishna Kund. At that time, Madhuban was filled with very, very beautiful kalpavriksha trees, and there were innumerable bumblebees that produced honey. There are the most nectarine beehives covering the trees. Not only the beehives, but even the trees themselves would produce sweet, sweet honey for the pleasure of Krishna and Balaram. Therefore, it became known as Madhuban, the forest of very, very sweet madhu or honey. The honey from the trees, the honey from the lords playing his beautiful flute, the honey of the lords' eternal pastimes being enacted, that is Madhuban. And Lord Krishna also would perform his most illustriously divine lila of the rasa dance on the banks of Krishna Kund with the gopis during the autumn season. One time the gopis were here at Madhuban weeping in separation from Krishna. When Balaram saw them, he wanted to pacify them, so he began to extol the beautiful qualities and pastimes of Krishna. As Balaram was explaining Krishna's glories, he was so absorbed that he turned black due to his absorption in the thought of Krishna. Just to your right is the Dauji Mandir, where Balaram manifested this beautiful blackish form while absorbed in chanting the holy glories and names of Sri Krishna. Madhuban is in fact a place of unlimited pastimes of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna and Krishna Balaram. In the age of Kali, Lord Balaram returned here in the form of Nityananda Prabhu. And Krishna returned to perform his pastimes here in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Lord Chaitanya came to Vrindavan, he traveled through all the 12 forests. And in his own heart of hearts, he was reenacting the divine pastimes of Sri Krishna Balaram, Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Madhuban is a very, very important place. It is a place that the Puranas, the Vedas glorify as where the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally descended in all of the four ages.